Hi, Max Alcoholic Addict. I'll preface with saying that I procrastinated and did not, like, make an outline or anything for myself, so bear with me. Another thing I'll preface with is I am trans, so about the childhood part is up to like 22. It's a lot of confusion for me. So I grew up an Army brat. My mom was Army and my dad was actually Air Force. I was a pretty quiet kid. For some reason, it's not one that my parents instilled in me or anything like that, but I always had this feeling like I was a burden, and I did the best that I could to minimize that feeling for anyone if they were to feel bad. So I was considered the good kid, and that was mostly because I'd stay to myself. I'd read a book. Most had to ask someone for it. It was like a snack or something. And I became the one that a lot of people would ask to watch, because my sister is the rambunctious one. So she was a bit more feisty. And childhood, it seems like it was pretty normal-ish. Raised in the suburbs. Nothing that I can remember went wrong. Although there's like I have trauma responses, so something probably happened, and probably if I can hit it from like repressed it or some shit. That was something that came up in like counseling. But then I am a heavy procrastinator, so still haven't really found a therapist to continuously work with. My high school, like depression, self-confusion, and a lot of anger started to pop up. I attempted suicide the first time in the ninth grade. And going to the psych hospital was about the first time in a long while that I felt comfortable. My mom took offense to it because I didn't want to leave the end of the 72-hour hold. So I ended up being there for about 12 to 14 days. But there was something about structure. Having some structure and stability kind of really worked for me. Later came to find out that I'm bipolar, so structure. You know, if you have it too, then structure tends to help alleviate some of the mental stress a bit. When I got out of the hospital, the information that I'd gone to the psych hospital and that I'd attempted suicide was not hidden. But I was lucky that in the area that I was in, it wasn't so much looked down upon, but it let me get away with a lot of stuff. I know you're capable of a lot of something more, but I feel like something's going on. So if there's anything that I can do to help you, then let me know. And that was pretty much across the board, teachers, adults of pretty much any kind. So I stopped doing just about anything. I didn't really participate in school. I started to get to a point where they just say, if I pass the test, then they'd pass me. So I would literally sit there and I'm like, I'm not doing homework. I'm not really doing classwork. As soon as you have a test, I'll do it. I mean, I listened during the classes and everything. So I passed tests. I didn't, and outside of that, I didn't really participate in school. I didn't participate in most things. I was always drawn to what some people would consider the wrong crowd. All my friends smoked weed and like to drink and everything. But because that nagging feeling of, wanting to not be a burden, I held off until I was 18. At some points in those teen years, I did some fucked up things to people, but I didn't use any drugs or drink abusively until I was 18. So that was all on me from the get go. One of those things was I had a thing about validation. One of my first addictions was to, I guess it's coda and intimacy. And I focused all that on one kid. And did not like being rebuffed. So it's like when I said, I love you. And he said, I don't feel that same way. Then I went on Facebook and I catfished him. And when he still didn't love me, I catfished the whole football team. So I had a lot of loneliness building up inside. I will say that my first time drinking actually came probably when I was like 3-ish, 4-ish. You know, a lot of people look at me funny when I say that, but it's my extended family is from Alabama. So it's a lot of things that slide. One of my favorite aunts, she made me her drinking buddy very early on. I still have a scar on my forehead from one time that she got me a little bit drunk and I chased my sister with the back end of a belt and she slammed the screen door in my face and we had to go to the ER. And when we got to the ER, my English was still pretty bad. So when I was telling them that my auntie gave me beer, they thought I said my auntie gave me a bear. So nobody got in trouble, but, yeah, I carried through there, and very early on, we switched from beer to me drinking Crown and Coke with her. And to this day, she says, I gave you more juice than alcohol. She doesn't really understand that no matter how much alcohol you put in there, if you give it to a really small child from toddler age to fucking, like 10, it's gonna hit. Something's gonna get felt. My second attempt at suicide was closer to 18. I started living with my dad, and it was the first time was kind of like curiosity and slight sadness, but that second time was like that first real low down dark one. Like the voices in the back of my head telling me that I wasn't good enough, that nobody loved me, and that I didn't deserve to be loved. And that was the first time that I it was more calculating in how I did it. And this thing that I still to this day do, when I feel too much, I kind of shut it all off. If anybody watches Vampire Diaries, pretty much like I flip that switch. And then I can do whatever the fuck I need to do. So that time was not the help. I mean, it's not a very healthy coping skill, but I learned how to work with that now. But then it didn't really help. It was like I shut off the tears and then I went into calculating mode. I looked out the window and saw my dad go off with his best friend to go do something, so I stopped what I was doing, went into his room, into his bathroom, and started going through all of his pills in his pill cabinet, and looking for what what I knew would pack a punch in clearing out like half of each pill bottle. Because back in my head, I was still that good kid, and I was like, well, he needs this because he has health issues and back problems. So I'm not going to take the whole bottle, but I'm going to take half of this bottle, and I'm going to take some out of that bottle, and I'm going to take some out of that bottle. So I did say I probably took somewhere around like 20, 25 pills. And then I laid down. I wrote my first suicide note ever. And like at the end of it, I was telling everyone that it wasn't their fault or anything. And at the end of it, I prefaced with, if it doesn't work this time, I promise not to do it again. So, and as you see, it didn't work that time. I'd woken up in the morning the next day, and the only reason why I got caught was because when I rolled over to get out of bed, I completely collapsed. And as we do, until we got to the hospital and until they did that UA at the hospital, I lied my ass off. I was like, I didn't take anything, I swear. And when it came out, my dad was pissed. So I got the soak in kind of the loving facet of it before he got to be pissed. And that was a little bit different because I think it wasn't until I was about 13, first time he ever said, I love you. And I didn't realize that until the first time he said it. And I had no freaking idea of what to say back. I still get a little bit befuddled every once in a while when I talk to him and he says it, but I kind of go on autopilot and say it back. Some people end up being confused about that, but my dad is emotionally stunted. He has his own issues with his dad who didn't claim him or his siblings that my grandma had through him, but like some of them, they're emotionally too open and too available to people and to their kids, and my dad's like the only one who kind of did the shutdown thing, which I inherited from him. Moving forward, I think I said at the beginning, my parents got divorced when I was 5, so I mostly lived with my mom. And when I turned 18 was the first time that I tried smoking weed. We were just at the pool, and my friends were used to like smoking around me and me saying, yeah, I don't do that. And then I was like, no, I want to try that. Can I try that? And then them telling me no. And then I was like, I'm going to ask one of the older kids. And they're going to make you. So I did exactly that. And funnily enough, I ate the roach the first time that I've ever tried smoking weed. And there was something about weed for a little bit that I did like. But at the same time, I hated it. So every time that I would smoke weed, while I was high, I'd say, I'm never going to do this again. And then the next day when there were some available, I was like, fuck yeah, I'm in. And that continued for some years. And after going to rehab, I realized the reason why I didn't like it is because I have control issues and I like feeling like I'm in control even when I'm fucked up and obviously not in control. So like the illusion of being in control. When I first started smoking weed, I started doing the thing that became my pattern. I completely stopped trying at everything. Wasn't even really trying at the taking tests for school or anything like that either. I ended up getting put on homeschooling for a little bit by my guidance counselor because one day I was sitting in English and this guy walked into the classroom and I got this urge to hit him in the face with my notebook. So instead of doing that, I felt like I should actually go say something. So I went to the counselor's office and I was like, hey, I feel like hitting this kid in the face with my notebook. And he was like, what did he do? And I was like, nothing. He walked in the classroom. He didn't even say anything to me. I don't really know why. I just really want to hit him in the face with my notebook. So they put me in homeschooling. And as soon as I got in homeschooling, then all I really did was smoke all day and all afternoon, wait for friends to get off school and get some more weed and smoke some more. That carried over a bit, and I moved to Texas August of 2012. If I had actually stuck it out and did what I was supposed to do in school, I was supposed to have graduated in 2012, but instead we moved here and I had to repeat the whole senior year, which turned out to be kind of fine. For some reason, it's like that change of place. Actually, I got my act together for a while. I finished school. The worst thing that I did in school when I got started here was smoke cigarettes. But I was like, I'm 18. Nobody else in the school is pretty much 18, so I don't really care. Technically, it's legal for me. If I go down the street and I smoke on the school property, I'm all good. So I finished up school here, and I had the feeling that I could try to do something with my life. So I tried going to college. I tried going for photography, got bored with that, and then I swapped over to fashion. And it was, I managed doing that for a little bit. I had my college best friend that I'd had for a while. I'd moved in with her and we kind of picked up some of the old habits. We'd smoked and we drank every day. But it kind of seemed manageable because we still paid our rent. We paid our light bill and our water and we drank and smoked pretty much the rest of it, and then called our moms and told them we were hungry and that we needed food, and that's how we paid for our food part. And it seemed a little bit, to us, it seemed a little bit healthy. But if I'm not mistaken, I think I remember my last day of school there, before we went in, I made a bag of vodka soaked gummy bears in a big old like Yeti thing of screwdriver, and like it wasn't like a healthy person's version of vodka soaked gummy bears. Like the shit was like gummy, like gooey, because I poured so much fucking vodka in the fucking bag. So suffice it to say, I was supremely feeling it by 2 hours into my first class. And I kind of stopped going to school after that. The Halloween of 2014, that was the first time that I'd ever worn girl clothes. My best friend at the time, she convinced me to do the gender swap Halloween costumes, which a lot of friends had asked me to do before, but I always declined. And this was the first time that I said yes. And when I finally was completely dressed up, I realized I felt the most me that I'd ever felt in my whole life. And that was like, I felt comfortable in my own skin for a while. But that kicked off my sex addiction again. I forgot to mention that when I hit 18, weed and alcohol weren't the only things that I was trying. I also finally tried sex, and I went like balls to the wall. wasn't really one to date. I was a massive hoe. I had a scientific version in my head of if something felt good, then there's always going to be something better. So if something felt awesome, then if you go out and try again, you might find something that's even more awesome. So when I transitioned, I started that up again. But this time, it was like there's some joy, some validation in it. But that didn't carry over well, as one might suspect. Instead, I dropped out of school. I just mostly drank and hooked up with guys 24/7. Eventually, I couldn't pay my rent with that friend, so it kind of dipped. Not good with confrontation, so I literally just like left one day while she was in class, and I went and I became a nanny for my sister when she was pregnant with her third child. With her, I moved back to Atlanta for a bit, and I was good for a little while. But third baby became like my baby. Like after about a month and a half, when he got weaned off the tip and he was just drinking breast milk in bottles, then I had him 24/7. He slept in the bed with me. I woke up when he woke up. I was with him always. My only break was when he was asleep. And I kind of slowed down on my drinking. I didn't really smoke anymore. And by slowed down, that's just that I started my new pattern of binging. So I would be fine with, I was fine with, not having it all the time, but when I had it, that bottle wouldn't last past that night. And people start to realize that to get me to do things, like you want me to babysit, you get me a bottle. If you want me to put something, you get something from Ikea, you want me to put it together, get me a bottle. So I got paid in alcohol a lot. I didn't really make any money for those 2 years. Pre-shadowing for once I finally got on meth. Everything seemed about okay to most. I ended up ditching my sister and moving back with my mom in Texas. So like every time I moved, I'd get my act together for a little while. When I came back, I got my act together, got my first real job, at a call center. It's not the best job if you think you want to be happy. And there I started a system where it's like, I only go out on Saturdays. So Saturday was my drinking day. And then I started to have friends who want to go out drinking on Fridays. So I started drinking on Fridays and I still drink on Saturdays because that's my scheduled day. Then payday started to hit on a lot of Thursdays. So then I started drinking on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Because I've still got to go out on Saturdays because that's my scheduled drink day. Still got to go out on Fridays because that's the day for friends when I go drink. And got to go out on Thursday because that's when I got paid. So that's when I have the most money in my bank account. Eventually, I quit work because work was getting in the way of my drinking. I started driving favor and Lyft and whatnot. And I told myself I was doing it to make a living. But really, I just drove for long enough to get money for my gas tank and to be able to go to my favorite bar and have a few drinks, because I would always like hang out in their parking lot to get that little ding that said you got to order or that you got to pick someone up. And I tell myself, I'm going to go inside for a little bit. I'm going to drink one beer because I can drive on one beer. I go in there and then like not even 10 minutes later, I'm just like clocking out of the app and ordering a double whiskey and Coke. And then that would start my night for there. And once my money ran out, I would start flirting. And by the time I went home, was probably blacked out. I blacked out drunk at that, going home from that bar so many times. My body was on autopilot. So I got to stop at Whataburger to get my food. And then after that, I didn't remember until the next morning when I woke up, my purse and my food in my bed. That carried on for a while. And I started slipping into a bit of a depression. And I tried getting another job working at a pizza place. And then because of my hoish ways, in boredom, I found a guy, went to go hang out with him, and then I found meth. And then from there started my downward spiral that didn't have a change of scenery, and then I get good again. It was just fucking down. When I would hang out with these people and I would get supremely unhappy around them. So then I make new friends. I didn't really pay for drugs. I always got my drugs free. And when looking back, I'm like, I don't understand why, because after a while, I wasn't even giving them, I wasn't even being a hoe. I was more interested in the meth, and I was smoking all their shit, like what they gave me and then what they said they were going to sell. I was like, I still convinced you to give me that. And I just sit there and I'm just consistently fucking smoking their shit. I get to these points towards the end. I get to these points of supreme depression, and I would end up going to my mom crying, bawling my eyes out, saying that I can't do this anymore. Something has to change. And she'd let me lay down, take a nap, and then after I woke up from the nap, I'd be like, I don't know what the hell was wrong with me. It's not that bad. And then I'd disappear again. And that cycle kind of continued for a while. I think the first time that I did that and kind of stuck with that feeling of I can't go back was Thanksgiving of 2018, I want to say. We ended up going on, when I did it that time, it was like the weekend before Thanksgiving. So I ended up sticking with them, and then we went to Alabama for Thanksgiving. And I can tell you now, the most I did on that trip was I would sleep, and I'd get up, then I'd drink, then I'd get some food, and I'd go back in the room, and I'd sleep, and then I repeated that for that whole week. Because I was craving that so bad, the alcohol didn't even feel as good as it used to feel to me. I wasn't really getting what I thought I needed from it, so it was pretty much just going through the motions. Because it wasn't like I wasn't going to drink; it was just it wasn't doing what I needed it to. Almost as soon as we got back from that trip, I was back at it again. A lot of girls have the story of other people wanting to take advantage of them. I was that bitch who was like offering myself up to it. Like telling you guys, hey, I want to try to escort. Will you help me? Pretty much like being like, you want to be my pimp? But I just got lucky at being around guys who were too awkward to even manage that or try. During that time period is when my codependency really started to take off. I didn't realize that I ever got lonely when I was younger, because I preferred being alone. But on meth, it's like I didn't like being alone. I didn't want to smoke alone. I didn't want to hang out alone, which is why every time I burned some bridges with people for a little bit, I always found new friends. So I was always surrounded by people. I think my last time that I went out on a bender and came back to my mom. It's like when I came back, I was like dead set in my head. I was like, I can't do this anymore. I need help and I don't know what I need, but I heard of something called like the 12 steps and rehab. And my mom was like, so how does that work? And I was like, I don't know. I saw it on fucking TV. Like, she's used to me like knowing what I need to help me and then me telling her that and she helping me figure it out. And I was like, I don't know how the fuck to find that shit. I see it on TV. Apparently it's people sitting in a circle and fucking talking about their problems. So we called around because obviously I didn't have a job, didn't have insurance. She spent a lot of money helping me through years, like through living expenses. So she didn't have money like shoot out on a rehab. So luckily found Austin Recovery, and I had the thing where they told me call twice a week. And once we have a bed available, then we'll tell you and you can come right on in. So for most of that month, that I was at my mom's, and I told her to take my keys, I was calling. I called twice a week. I made sure of that. She had to go on a little trip at one point, and she had put me in an extended stay, and because I wasn't allowed to be in her house without her there. I thought I was going to be good when she took me there, and then immediately when I checked in and went into my room, this guy from like downstairs called up to my room and was like, I saw you checked in. You want to go to the bar for a drink? And I was like, sure. You want to meet me at the bar? You want to come down to my room? And I was like, I'll come down to your room. As soon as I get in there, he didn't recognize me. I recognized him, and then he asked if he can use his pipe. And I was like, oh, you do that? I do that too. So immediately, not even like 3 hours after she dropped me off, I was relapsing again. That time, like the whole cycle of feeling good, hating everyone that I'm around, and then feeling that feeling of I can't do this. Instead of it happening over the course of like 2 to 3 weeks, it happened in the course of 3 days. By the end of that last day, I smashed my bowl, got on my hands and knees, cleaned that whole fucking room, and then I sat in the middle of my bed for the rest of that week waiting for my mom to come and get me. And yes, during that week, I still called Awesome Recovery twice, even when I was fucked up, because it was like, this is my last hooray shit, and I'm still going to go to rehab. By the time I made it to Awesome Recovery, I did a lot of my routine was sleeping, I had a twitch in my foot, and kind of my little warning sign of you're craving, and then I'd go for a long ass walk, which we're in Texas, it's hot, so I'd walk until I got tired, and I got too hot, and then I'd go back and I repeat the process. And got to Austin Recovery, I quickly made some friends. I was very nervous going in, but obviously some people didn't realize that because I'm an extra bitch. So I went in there in the crop tops and high-waisted jeans with a big old sun hat on and my purse and my bags, like I was fucking all that bitch going to the rehab with the fucking masseuses and shit. And I was like, okay, yada, yada, yada. Is Vicky fucking helping me out with the paperwork and stuff? I was very confused when it had the part about how much do you use, and I was like, I don't know, I got it for free. And she was like, well, you can't put a lot, so fucking just kind of put a number on there. So yeah, she was quickly one of my favorite people there. She got me over to my room. One of my litter mates happened to walk by, because after I got into the room, I changed into some comfy clothes, and then I was like, I'm gonna stay in here for a while. But luckily somebody walked by and she was like, it's lunchtime. You want to get some food? And I was like, okay. Shipped to the cafeteria, quickly out to the smoking area. And that was the first time I met Eden, my best friend. She scared the shit out of me for like the first day that I was there. I thought she was that bitch. Little did I know that later on she'd be, that's my baby. It was like my daughter. I stuck close with her. I had one mental breakdown while I was in there. She was about the only person that I opened up to for a while. Started getting that comfortable with myself, and actually more comfortable than I'd ever been. while I was at the ranch. So I started getting more comfortable with people. I think Jennifer was my first alumni that I got really attached to. Like every Sunday, she'd be the first person that I looked out for in the crowd. After I finished up, I was that person who was like, I'm not doing the steps. You guys showed me that I have a disease and I'm going to go to meetings. And within 3 weeks, I relapsed. But it was a 3-day relapse. I came right back because it was immediately, like some people say, like once you get like that knowledge, once you get the 12-step knowledge, once you get the recovery knowledge, it's like going back up, it don't feel the same. And my experience, that's what I've seen when a lot of people go back out. What takes them the longest to come back is not so much that they're having a grand old time. It's really like the shame. Like they don't want to come back and see the same old people and feel looked at differently or ashamed. And so for me, I don't look at anyone different. Today I work in treatment. I'm like, if I have a client who comes back, I'm like, what's up? How are you? And then I'm like, wait, you're here. Well, I'm happy that you came back. But obviously things didn't pan out well. So what are we going to do different? But after I relapsed, I hopped into my step work. I got a new sponsor. I still have that sponsor. We've been working together for almost 2 years now. I'm going to be 2 years on July 20th. I eventually moved into sober living. Like I said, I work in treatment. My life started building up around me. I started getting more comfortable around people. I eventually became very comfortable with pretty much everybody in alumni. I love all of you guys. I used to think that I was going to be that person who was like, I can be at every alumni event. And then I got a job. And then I learned that I couldn't do things the way that I completely did them in early recovery. Because early recovery, I didn't have a job. So my full-time job was going to meetings. Like Eden said last week, I know we hit more than 90 and 90 because we went to like 3 fucking meetings a day because we didn't have jobs. So all we did was go to meetings, go to Zilker in between meetings, and then go to more meetings. But now, for a long while now, it's been we got jobs. So we're like, hey, we each have our own schedule with which meetings we go to that works with our schedule. And every once in a while, we can get together and go to a meeting together. I eventually moved into sober living. I've been at sober living for over a year. I'm finally moving out. I leave sober living on the 1st. And I moved into my very own apartment on July 1st. I start school on the 1st. I'm going to get my LCDC because pretty much all my recovery life is I'm basic as fuck when it comes to recovery. Got a vape, work in treatment, live in sober living. I'm about to go get my LCDC. But I'm probably going to start drinking a lot of Topo Chicos, you know, just the full starter pack. But life is a whole lot fucking better. It's not always roses. I'm not going to lie to you and say there's always roses. I'm fucking diagnosed bipolar. It's not one of those things where it's like, my come down from meth made me emotionally unstable. I'm like, no, I was emotionally unstable long before I ever picked up a bolo. Like, I take my meds on time. I go to my meetings. I work on my recovery. I try to figure out when I'm depressed, if it's my brain chemistry making me depressed or if it's situational and I'm falling off in my program. And I work on that. And it helps so much. And it feels so good being of service to people and helping people. My life is took a turn into a direction that I never anticipated. like a lot of people say, no, nobody would ever, when they were a kid, ever say that their goal is to be an addict in sobriety, which is true. My goal when I was a kid was to be dead. So I didn't really expect to be 27. Shit. Like, when I turned 27, I tell everybody else that they're not old, but I'm coming up towards 30 and I feel like I'm supposed to have some shit figured out. And I'm just now learning some stuff. And apparently in 3 years, if I go by my mental understanding of how things are supposed to go, I'm supposed to have like a house and a husband and kids coming up. And I don't think I'm ready for any of those, or even very sure if I want any of those. All I know is I want a cat. And I'm moving into my own apartment. That's about it. That's what the most plans I can tell you for right now. But I try to stay active, in my community. I do a lot of, I try to stick with doing a lot of service work at my home meeting house. I go to Club 101. I can't really say that I have a home group because I go to like all the HAs. I've never tried heroin before, but I fucking love junkies. I have friends that I can depend on. And I have this whole new family that actually feel like understands me and that I understand because my family by blood, like we're blood relatives, but we aren't family. I don't understand them. They don't understand me. Never have, never will. And about the only way that I ever knew how to be around them and how to seem okay was to be drunk as shit. And now I've learned that I can't force it. Like if I can't be around some people, that is perfectly fine. If I need to reevaluate where I need to be, then that is perfectly fine. I don't really go to many family functions. If I do, then it's kind of a stop in for a good hour or so. And then I'm outsies. If anybody asks me if I'm gonna stay sober forever, if I'm never gonna drink again, I'm like, can't promise that, but I can promise you this. If I drink, I'm gonna go do some meth. So that does kind of help stop family from offering me alcohol. So I think that's about it. Instead, I didn't have an outline, so you kind of just had to bear with me through that. I hope it made sense.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Nick.
You're killing it. Keep it up, man.
True.
Thank you, Nick, for sharing. I thought it was amazing.
Can't do that. Oh.